Malcolm Eadie, you've got the Reserve Bank's Financial Stability Review coming out tomorrow. Obviously, that's framed independently of what the FSI has been looking at, but clearly you would be thinking perhaps, I suppose, about the way you would frame future reviews depending on what recommendations are taken up by government. Is that a fair assessment or just journalistic wishing for an answer?
You might be pushing a little bit hard on that one. As you've said, we've got a financial stability review out tomorrow. I'm not going to tell you what's in it because I'm not allowed to, and it would be most improper. But we're focused on what are the risks right at the moment and what are the things that might happen further down the track. Now, the system is going to evolve over time. Recommendations from the FSI are going to be looked at and most likely many of them implemented. We'll think about what all that means for the financial system over time, but I think the really big issues for us in our regular stability assessments are what's going on in the markets at the moment, who's taking the risk, who's going to get into trouble, who might get into trouble, what are the warnings we need to give to forestall that. That's what our report will be about.
David Murray, how concerned are you about Australia's international reputation given the issues of debt and deficit that you were talking about before? And do you have specific concerns about Australia's AAA credit rating?
Well, let's go back to the start. If you're a prolific user of foreign savings, then keep yourself a good reputation. If we don't know how the debt and deficit should work, we leave them to guess. That's not a very solid position. And clearly, with a commodity-dependent economy, then there will be swings in revenue. That means there'll be swings in the deficit. It used to be a bipartisan position, and people would say it still is, but it's not clear that it is, that we should balance the Commonwealth budget through the cycle. Now, that would suggest that it goes in and out of debt and has no debt through the cycle. But if you get an adverse event, then you would go into debt for a period and work your way out. But the ratings agencies don't look at the Commonwealth debt. They look at Commonwealth net debt plus state net debt. And in the Australian structure, you would expect the states to actually have debt. Because they actually, if you want to finance infrastructure the most beneficial way for the community, you would do it at the government level, if the government can. So you would expect them to have debt and the Commonwealth to go in and out of debt, because the Commonwealth just does a few warships and apart from that, it does social infrastructure, not economic infrastructure. Now, getting that working well was clearer shared values around that could only help us. But, the budget's going to go back into surplus and then it's not for another 5 years and then something else happens and everyone's left guessing. But that does leave our AAA rating vulnerable because the rating agencies take a forward-looking view, not a today view. And on the numbers that some of them use, if you take last year's the forward estimates in the budget, add on the revenue measures that are not now going to be collected, which have not been passed by the Senate, then throw in five more years of so much percent GDP per annum of extra deficit, we're getting close to the threshold.
So how are we going to be looking in, say, 10 to 20 years if none of the hard recommendations out of the FSI are taken up? How will we be placed, particularly if there is another shock like out of 2008?
Well, our recommendations are what you do inside the financial system to help help the economy if it does get buffeted. And our concerns were, firstly, if there is trouble in the taxpayers drawn in, can the taxpayer get out at no cost or even a small profit like the Americans are good at? And in particular, do you add more layers of risk? Paul Keating came to see me at the bank one time, and there's a beautiful building up there at 48 Martin Place, and there's a column like that with marble, He walked in and he slams his hand on the marble and he says, well, I'm not going to lose my deposit here, am I? And I said, well, we only make it look like that because if you look at our balance sheet, we're horribly leveraged. Now, what we said in our inquiry was, don't add to a leveraged banking system a leveraged superannuation system. You know, we had this great chat about culture before, but listen to the radio and the advertisements about borrowing for residential property in self-managed funds. Set up a bare trust, looks clean as, but of course there's a personal guarantee over here to keep the bank happy. So, you know, if it smells like...
And Malcolm Eadie, in terms of financial stability, what concerns does the RBA have about this, given that in some ways we are seeing a return of the, you know, property spruiker, for example?
Oh, well, you know, the things we've been talking about recently, we have highlighted the buoyancy in property markets, and maybe I'll say a bit more about that later. Just responding to some of the things that that David has said, sound banking is very important. The banks play a very important role in the financial sector, and they run a type of risk that needs to be very carefully managed. We've heard about leverage. Banks are highly levered. In some ways, if you're running another type of business, you might think the leverage banks are running sounds enormously high, but what you've got to remember is banks are in the leverage business. It's their business to take money from depositors and lend it to the people that want to borrow. It's the role of the regulators, and especially APRA, to make sure that that is done safely, that leverage isn't excessive, or that's properly managed. You know, one of the motivations for that is what David's already talked about. We need to have proper international access, be fully trusted, all of that. Another very important thing that also needs to be emphasised is we need to minimise, to the extent reasonably possible, the risk of crisis, because crises are enormously expensive. We didn't have a financial crisis here when the rest of the world did, but some of the countries that did saw their GDP fall by amounts of the order of 5 or 6%. You know, that's, if you think back to one of our bad recessions, the early 90s, GDP fell by about 1%. This is a 6% fall. So really big things can happen in a financial crisis, and we need a safe system to safeguard against that.
Well, speaking of payment systems, and you might be able to actually answer this, Malcolm, but does anyone on this panel still write cheques or use cheques? Anyone in this room write a cheque?
About 4 a year.
A few, okay. How long is it going to be before banks actually say we are no longer going to be using cheques as a payment system?
Well, you've got to go and talk to the conveyancers first. You still have to settle a real property transaction with a bank cheque.
That's right.
Which, according to a high court case that we ran at the Commonwealth Bank, you can dishonour. So the conveyancers haven't caught up, but that's an old issue. So there's a lot to be done, and if you really wanted to fix it, you'd have to legislate for it.
Right, okay. Malcolm?
I'll make a brief comment on that, and then I wanted to come back to something that Kevin said. I think on the cheque, I mean, the thing about the cheque is usage is going down because it's being replaced by other things, but the cheque is still, for many people, a useful all-purpose payment instrument, and it's not going to disappear until the system collectively can find something that that does with just as much convenience what the cheque can do. That still has to happen before cheques can disappear. But to come back to Kevin on this futurism about the payment system, it is good to think through those kind of futuristic scenarios. And I may not look it, but I'm old enough to remember, you know, the 70s and the 80s when an old regulatory system was overtaken by events and we had to deregulate because... people had found cumulatively over time so many ways to innovate around regulation that the old system didn't work. We need to make sure that doesn't happen again, so we need what Helen talked about, the flexible capacity for the regulators to work together to spot what's going on, make recommendations to government to make sure we can adjust to it and so on. But having said all of that, I think we're a long way away from that world of the existing regulatory structure being overtaken by events. Still, even though there are all these very innovative payment devices where you can flick money from one person to another, most people, when it comes down to it, when they want to make a payment from person A to person B, they want money in person A's bank account to get to money in person B's bank account where they might bank with different banks. And that means we have to have safe banks and we have to have infrastructure that connects the banks to each other to enable that to happen efficiently. That's actually the next big innovation in payments that's right. being worked on at the moment.
Yeah. And Malcolm Eady, a final word from you.
Oh, well, we want the system, the same objectives as what's set out in the FSI. We want the system to be safe and we want it to be cost-effective and innovative. I'd like to see all those things. To me, that means crisis avoidance. That's a really big priority. And then, obviously, there's going to be a whole lot of innovation that will facilitate better service delivery to the customer.